It is 6 o'clock. I will call us to order. And note that we have a quorum present and ask that everyone stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Everybody signed in on their computers? That would include me, by the way. There are 25 members present. That is a quorum. I would ask that we consider ourselves in public hearing for the adoption of the La Crosse County Final Supervisory District Plan. And note that no one signed up to speak and no one wrote any comments, although we were prepared for them in the hallway. Thank you, Ginny and Amy, for that. But just to be sure, I will ask if there is anyone from the public who wishes to be heard. Is there anyone who wishes to be heard on the redistricting plan? Third and final call. Anyone who wishes to be heard in the public hearing on the final redistricting plan? If not, I will ask for a motion to close the public hearing. Moved by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Hampson to close the public hearing. All those, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. One no, Supervisor Bina, on closing the public hearing. Yeah, we're not voting on the plan. We're just on closing the public hearing. Can we count you as a yes? Excellent. So the public hearing is closed at the unanimous vote. To that point, though, under my report, I would note that the final action that we need to take on the redistricting plan will be Thursday night. And I believe that we've noted in the agenda that we will ask for both the first and second reading so that we can be in compliance with the state statutes that requires us by September 19th to have that final redistricting plan approved. So that plan should be in your packet for Thursday, and that, Supervisor Bina, is perhaps when you want to cast that vote. Well, that's when we will be, that's on the agenda for Thursday, and that's when we will be taking that final vote. Any questions on that? Supervisor Schrader.
Will we see a detailed map with the streets and everything on it? Will we do that, get that?
Well, what I can tell you is that the maps are on the in the back of the room. The maps that are consistent with the plan are on the bulletin board in the back of the room. Maybe Jeff or somebody else can address the issue of what is available in what level of detail for supervisors. Jeff, could you come up to the podium and answer Mr. Schrader's question, please?
This. If the county board members do want individual ones, we can put them up on the wall. That's something that we can do, and it'll show the streets.
Mm-hmm. And is it possible if they're interested ahead of time to come up and look at those at Ron's desk or someplace on the computer up in the
zoning
office?
Well, the official copy, I think, is the one that's in the back room there up on the wall, and that will be in the county clerk's. There's actually two of them back there, but the map on the right-hand side back there shows the wards, and the one on the left is the supervisory districts. So Whatever you guys want, we will do. And there'll be I would prefer to have them in the county clerk's office for a review, because that's where it says they're supposed to be. Okay.
Supervisor Feehan.
Well, just so that's.
Oh,
gonna,
I'm sorry.
Just so I get it clear, this is going to be up for us to see before we vote on it, then?
They will continue to be up there, and they will continue to be available in they have been in the zoning office. Now they'll be. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. They have been in the clerk's office, so they will continue to be in the clerk's office until 10 years from now, probably, when we draw them again. So, yes, they are there for anybody who wants to look at them.
The reason I was asking that, I couldn't get the definition on a computer to come up clear enough so that I could see what streets were where.
Okay.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Schrader? Sorry, I cut you off before. Supervisor Feehan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, would it be possible for us to make these available through the county website for the public to go in and check which district they'll be in? I've had a lot of questions about that, and so if that would be possible, I think it would it'd be good, because then I could just tell them go to the county website. That I know you can go there now and look at it, but it's the same issue that I think Supervisor Schrader is raising, which is that the maps aren't completely
detailed. The resolution.
Detailed. I don't think all the streets are on there.
Right.
And there may not even be street numbers where streets are split. So,
and
Mr. O'Malley?
Members of the board, our hope is to actually get that as part of your interactive new county board website, mm-hmm. as well, to figure out some means that as the election process and taking out papers, that will be something that they can go to and actually see both constituents as well as potential candidates. That you'd actually see that as part of the new improved county board website. So that's also part of the goal.
How soon might that be available?
Can we let the county clerk chime in on this, because okay. she has some appropriate information?
You might have heard there's still elections going on. So on the county board website, where it will show what district you're in, you can't update that yet to the new one, because these people still need to know where they're currently living to be able to vote for this 95th special election. So if we update it all, some people will be moved around. So we want to make sure we don't change it until after the elections are officially done for the year.
Mm-hmm.
But we have been working with IT, and that will be all updated to show the districts and their address ranges.
So it might be fair to say that those things will be updated after the election in November?
After the November 8th election.
Okay. In the meantime, the best tool for the public is the map that's posted on
the
county website.
Map, I believe,
right.
is on the website.
And if they don't find the answer they need there, they can call the county clerk's office.
Or the zoning office, yeah. We'll be more than happy to help them.
Thank you.
If I could add to that, the county has a land record site, too, that can be found under the zoning department. And if you pull up the individual parcel ownerships, it will tell you what ward you're in and the supervisory district.
I actually went in and checked that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it might have been 30 days ago. I don't remember exactly, but it was still showing the old district at that time. So has that been recently updated?
Well, as soon as the election gets done and the county board, your individual district site on the county board site will have not only your picture, some data about you, but it'll also have the supervisory map that you'll be able to blow up.
Okay.
Thank
you.
But that'll be done probably November, December.
Well, as mm-hmm. everyone here is probably aware, on I think it's December 1st, we take out papers for next board. So thank you.
Sure.
We're well aware of that. And with this other election, it's given us a very tight deadline. But the state's going to try to import the Weisler information into SVRS, which will allow the people to go to VPA, which is a voter.
Could you define those initials for us, please? Whistler.
Weisler is a program that Jeff has been using to create these maps. The Government Accountability Board will download it into the statewide voter registration system, where voters can go to see where they're living. There will be that really quick, tight deadline of when the election is done and when December 1st happens for you to take out your paperwork. But we're working with the state, because I had to make them aware of these deadlines when they called this election.
Thank you.
So we're working on it.
Thank you very much.
Supervisor Cruz. Oh, I'm sorry, Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. I noticed at the last meeting that we talked about this issue that it was mentioned that maybe some minor tweaks might need to be made. Are there any that have had to be made? Mr. Blusky can probably answer that.
We haven't, to answer that question, we haven't found any, but we're working with the county clerk right now. She's trying to create ballot styles in the communities that still have an election coming up. And actually, I think more of the questions are coming from the old ward maps than the new maps. So we haven't found any discrepancies at all.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And just a reminder that every municipality approved their ward map. That's what led the redistricting committee to approve the redistricting map that is before us on Thursday night and posted on the back there. So that process is complete now. Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, is there an actual set date when we're switching from one plan to the other? I mean, when we're switching from the old 35 to the new?
Yeah. The election's in April of 2012.
Okay.
So the...
If a primary...
Did everybody hear that? I don't know. If a primary is necessary. But the cycle leading to April elections for the county board will be when we use the new maps. Did that answer your question?
Okay, so is that December 1st when we take out papers?
If the election. If the election is closed out at both the county and the state level. There's a lot of paperwork that has to be done after Election Day, and we can't update everything until that is done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the best I can answer that question.
Okay. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you. Is it possible to amend this at this time or not, the district maps? And if so, what would the procedure be?
Mr. Shepherd.
I'll answer that. The answer is no. That's correct. But you have to understand that if you vote it down, that means that some municipality or individual could go to court and try to get their plan approved. So that could really upset the whole election process. You're talking about a very short time window, as has been explained by the county clerk. It would create chaos, in my view.
All right. The second agenda item under my report is to ask for group participation in this part of the meeting. So everybody get ready. I'm getting scowls from the front of the room already. We know that if the plan is approved on Thursday, we will be at 29 supervisors. And what I wanted to do tonight was just spend a little bit of time brainstorming or generating ideas as a group about what that might mean for us as a county board. So that could mean anything. It could mean our budget, the county board budget. It could mean committee structure. It could mean, as some have raised the issue, the discussion about selection of committee chairs, that I would like for us to collectively be thinking about what will change, what things will change going from 35 supervisors to 29. And so what I hope to do is just ask you to help brainstorm those ideas as a way to generate a list, a to-do list, a work list for a special committee that may be formed of this body to come up with a proposal for any changes that need to be made. So, for example, if we think that the committee structure stays the same, but we just have to adjust the membership of those committees by six supervisors, how do we accomplish that? There will need to be some ordinance changes. So to make sure that we aren't forgetting anything, so that we have in place all of the ordinances, all of the housekeeping that needs to be done, so that we, the new county board that gets elected in April, is ready to proceed with those new arrangements in place. So I'm asking for your suggestions on what we might need to be paying attention to make sure that we are ready for that transition. The crowd goes wild. Supervisor Meyer.
I assume you want those in writing or an email or something?
Well, we could do it that way. I think Amy's also prepared to help out by just writing on the board. Quite frankly, I'm not sure how long the list is. And if it's a short list, then maybe we don't need to go through a process of having a special work group. If it's a longer list, then perhaps we do. So I would appreciate it if we could spend some time now generating those ideas and getting a sense from the whole group what those items are. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I might have had a little bit to do with this discussion. One of the simpler ways, it appears, is maybe go to four committees, seven-member committees. The board chair would not be on any. And the simplest of those, you know, we can redo them all, or combining law enforcement and aging and long-term care, since they seem to be, their meetings aren't as long and stuff. But, I mean, that's just a possibility. But four committees comes out with still our seven members, which helps with quorums and all that. So that's okay. Certainly a possibility. I personally don't think we need to worry about the chair selection committee until we get the committee formed. I think that's the big challenge we face, is the getting committee structure done in time for the April. Thank you.
Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kind of in the same lines as what we just heard, he's suggesting grouping meetings, committees together, where I was looking at maybe is it a possibility of committee sizes if we have it stay the same the way it is to lower the numbers on the committees. Just a suggestion.
Great. Supervisor Flood.
I'd like to see the same number of committees. It seems to me that the committees work hard and really add something to our knowledge, and we trust them. So I would like to see the same number of committees, and if that means lessening the number of people on the committee, that I think that's just fine.
Supervisor Burke.
Thank you. I too think that we should keep the standing committees the same. We have the five standing committees plus the executive committee, and I think we could easily reduce four of those by one supervisor. Not the Health and Human Services, because it's my understanding that that may be dictated by state statute. But the others, I think, could be reduced by one person and still have an effective committee. And then the only other thing that has, and I know that some people don't choose to be on other committees, but it would be good if we could get more of an equitable distribution of the county supervisors on some of the other the numerous committees that have supervised, and I know some of those are dictated too by ordinance, but if that would be possible. But I think I like the five standing committees and just a reduction.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. I agree that the committees that the standing committees that we have at the moment were thoughtfully put together in for their areas of responsibility, and if there was going to be any merging of committees, before anyone would suggest which ones should be merged, I think you would have to look at the commonality of interests, and I'm not sure whether there is that much commonality between the senior citizens and the law enforcement people. So to me, I think it's the five that we've got are working well. They have been working well, to my knowledge. Thank you.
Supervisor Paff.
Yes, thank you. I agree that we should continue with the five committees, but if you used a scenario of aging and long-term care to five, health and human services stays at seven, judiciary law moves to five, and planning and resource develop moves to stays at seven, and public works stays at seven, that's 31. That's the problem. But as far as putting them at an even number, like Supervisor Burke said, that can run into problems down the road for the simple reason you don't have, you can end up in a 3-3 tie or things like that, and where do you go from there? So if there was some way that you could work out reducing, just in my opinion, the three that I mentioned, health and human services, in planning and resource development, and public works, it's tough to move one of them to five, but then you would end up with your number of 29, but I wouldn't want to have to choose on them. But it is, but to get the 29 and keep a odd number of committee members, which I think is important, help me.
Help with your math?
No, the math is fine. It's a matter of which one you're going to take away. I think the math is correct. But of those, this is my opinion, that aging and long-term care and judiciary and law could be reduced to five. That's my opinion. Maybe that isn't somebody else's opinion, but that's my opinion. But the other three, I have a bit of a problem trying to reduce the size of them.
Supervisor Geary.
I think the committee numbers should remain the same. I'm not hung up about it. If one person happened to get on two standing committees, what's the big deal? When we used to have a lot of committees, I used to have a half a dozen of them. Executive, finance, negotiations, public works, but we call it something else, and whatever. So it's not a big deal. Three or four people may pick up another committee. As to the size of the standing committees, I think each one should put it on their next agenda and recommend what number they'd like to see next April. Maybe some of them, since some of us don't serve on those currently, I don't know what their workload is. If they think they can get by with five, fine. If they want to remain at seven, that's fine with me too. I don't think that's, it has to come out one person on, you know, each standing committee. Some people will get two. I think the thing will get corrected if, when the appointments get made, there's a more equitable committee assignments, and some people get a lot and some people don't get many, and I think we can just iron that out.
Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. I just wanted to point out that traditionally we've had one supervisor who serves on both aging and long-term care and health and human services.
Supervisor Burke. Okay. Supervisor Schrader.
I would like to explore the possibility of eliminating the executive committee and replacing it with the committee of the whole.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that's a good idea. We talk about transparency, and while I don't want to copy a lot of what the city does, I think that by having the, you know, something come up once and then 10 days later, I think it certainly makes it more transparent. And I noticed that a lot of the coverage, television coverage and that to get input comes because the city has the first meeting and then 10 days later or whatever their number of days is later, another meeting. So it gets in the media, especially more controversial things, where ours seems to be very much below the radar. So I think that'd be an excellent thing. The danger is that we fight the battle twice, and that would have to be up to us members to, you know, not rehash the first vote, but if new information comes to light or something. So I think that's an excellent idea. Thank you.
Let me ask this. It seems like there's a lot of opinion on the committee structure. Are there any other issues besides, other than committee structure, numbers, membership, configuration, that comes to anybody's mind that we need to be paying attention to as we transition from 35 to 29. Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I forgot one. The public does not get an opportunity to speak at the planning meeting or the regular county board meeting. The only committee they can speak at is the committee that's handling the issue that they're concerned about. That means most of the supervisors aren't at that meeting. I think at one of these meetings, either the planning meeting or the county board meeting, at the beginning of the meeting, and this wouldn't come up on very many issues, but occasionally their only alternative is to call us, send us a letter, whatever, but on verbal input, asking questions, the only people that can do it are the ones on the standing committee that they showed up for. So if there's a mechanism where they can address the whole county board on one of these two meetings, I think we should look into that.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything, but listening to these remarks about committee of holes and everything, you know, there was a time in my life when I dabbled around with the Green Party, and I went to a few of their meetings, and they were always doing this consensus stuff. And they were all talking, they were all equal, and the dang thing lasted for about 500 hours, and I quit going because it was driving me nuts. There has to be leadership. Somebody has to lead, and that's we don't have that model here at the county. They have it across the street. They have a mayor, executive branch, and they have a legislative. We don't have an executive branch, except we have an administrator, but he's not elected. So we need somebody to lead us, and I believe in that model. And so I expect the county board chairperson to lead and not do the Green Party stuff. That's my thought.
At the risk of being Green Party-ish, is there anything anybody else wants to contribute? Supervisor Cotter.
This is more something that I'd appreciate a little help from the county board members as to, I'm not suggesting the county board meeting time should be changed, but the discussion is going on across the way at City Hall. And I would just be very interested if it was appropriate to have a show of hands of how many people prefer the 6 o'clock time to a later time. Would that be
is
fair
this,
to ask?
You're talking about as we move to the next cycle when we might meet? I think it's appropriate. I don't think it's appropriate tonight, but that can certainly be part of this process, that the work group could certainly do a polling or do a show of hands at a meeting. Absolutely. So meeting time should be on that list. Anything else? Supervisor Mock.
You know, we don't even know what the districts are looking like for sure. I think there's going to be some way of, we've got to do some publicizing, and of course lots of people don't have the Tribune. I don't know how, but people are going to be wondering, and maybe they won't even realize it, but you know, the boundaries are changing on some of these districts, and somehow or other the districts that are having boundaries changed, I think, may have to be have some form of informational ideas sent to them, or somehow or other publicize the fact this is going to be, in my case, the 13th district, the way it sounds, and Sebronic's going to be a portion that's part of that. I mean, it's
yeah, I think
there are
all
be
districts
changes.
All districts change.
All have changed.
All
okay.
districts change.
So it's not totally a new experience. But how have people figured out where to vote and all that sort of thing?
So publicizing before? And public awareness of the new maps.
Yeah.
Supervisor Burke.
I'm just wondering, and I guess I should know this because I've gotten a tax bill every year for a long time, but does it at all say on that tax bill what your new district might be?
No, I don't believe so. Yeah, we got to wait till Thursday, but
could that?
That would be a suggestion for publicizing. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was working on the Wisconsin State Legislature's website today, and there's a place you can go that says who represents me, and you enter your address and it brings up who your state senator and who your representative is. I'm wondering if we could get that, something like that, on our website.
Ginny has something to say in response to that.
That's the VPA I was talking about before, the Voter Public Access. It is a website. You go out there. Once all this redistricting takes place, you enter your address. It'll say who's representing you. It'll tell you your polling place. It'll show you every time you voted, how you voted. Not who you voted for. If you voted absentee or at the polls. but that website is out there, and it's updated as we go along.
So we could link to that.
It's on the election county clerk portion of the website.
Oh, okay. Good. Thanks.
Any other myths we want to dispel, like voting is private? Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One thing that to me was real important, we changed the ordinance several years ago, and that is the county board chair appointing people to committees and when they lack quorums. You go from 35 to 29, I guarantee you, it doesn't make any difference what size the committee would be, you're going to have quorum problems. And that was a good, I don't know who suggested that, but came up with a good solution. Because I know it's helped me at Public Works several times. I hope we don't change that. Thank you.
And you've helped out other committees over the years, too. Thank you. Any other ordinance issues, like beyond the committee structure or publicizing and promoting the new maps? Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. As to Chuck Spiker's point, we could consider, too, that the chair of that committee could appoint someone to sit in because you can't always reach the board chair.
Any other items for the list? Supervisor Geary.
Well, this discussion about committees not making a quorum concerns me, and I'm sure it concerns the general public. If, and I'm not picking on anyone because I haven't dug through the minutes, but if somebody misses a meeting two or three times, possibly we should have a mechanism that maybe somebody else should be sitting on that committee. If a committee's having trouble getting a quorum, there's a problem. When you run for office, you got to go to meetings. You've got to make your schedule to go to meetings. Occasionally you'll be sick or something will happen or whatever. But you should make the meetings. And I'm concerned about anybody on a habitual basis not making the meetings. They shouldn't remain on that committee as my, and if we need an ordinance or a mechanism to correct that problem, the one problem we shouldn't have is everybody running for office and get elected and don't show up for the meetings. That's a problem.
Anything else for the list? As Supervisor Meyer started us off on this conversation, tonight isn't the only night to add to this, so if you think of something in the next week or so, 10 days, even in the course of the work that we need to do to be prepared for this reduction in the size of the county board, I would welcome your comments and note that Tuesday mornings from 9 until noon and Wednesday afternoons from noon until 4 and Thursday mornings from 8 until 11:30, you should find me in the office upstairs. We'll make sure to communicate this to everyone. But those are the office hours that have been established, and you can always email, call, but those are the hours. Hopefully you'd be able to find me in the office upstairs as well. So thank you, everybody, for playing along with our game here, participating in this process. The county board budget also is a spinoff of this. I'm kind of surprised it didn't come up, actually, in the conversation. But just of note, like all departments are doing, the county board budget is being reviewed right now. And one of the dynamics is what does it mean to shift from 35 to 29 in terms of compensation, in terms of benefits, travel, conference meeting expenses, those kinds of things. I will note that it's been two cycles, I believe, since county board supervisor pay has changed. So that is part of this consideration, and the executive committee in the October cycle will be looking at the proposed county board budget that will feed through the cycle just like all other committees are doing. So if you have any suggestions about that, I would welcome them as well. And If I could note that for me, what is important about that process is to be equitable and fair, to have as much as possible equal compensation for county board supervisors. And also, I think as part of that process, we could all stand, at least I could, stand a refresher course on what the ordinance says about expenses and just to be reminded of what that compensation, what the compensation is, what the rules are for mileage and meetings and so forth. So that will be part of the process that we look at in executive committee as well. Supervisor Feehan.
Well, being as we'll have six fewer supervisors, and I will be one of those six fewer because I don't intend to run again, I think I can voice my opinion and say that one of the learnings I had in becoming a supervisor is just how much time is invested in all the ancillary standing committee meetings, in the reading that goes into the Health and Human Service Board meetings, just how long the Health and Human Service Board meetings can be. And I recall our chairwoman from Health and Human Services saying this some time ago, and so it's going to be one of those occasions where we agree, but I think that it's time.
I felt the earth move just now. Did anybody else?
You know, so I'm just going to say that I think it's time for supervisors to have a raise, and I think that the savings that we're going to experience from the downsizing of the board creates a situation where we don't have to increase the budget for county board supervisor pay. And I will say that I think it probably creates an added incentive for people who aren't traditionally the types of people that run for this board to consider running. It's not as easy for people that are still in the workforce. I'm one of those people, and you know, travel and trying to work your schedule around. I think increasing compensation for supervisors might attract different types of people to it. So, but I do think that a lot of the work that the people on this board do is largely unrecognized by the public, and I know what I'm saying probably doesn't come real well from a fiscal conservative, but I do think it's time for board supervisors to get a substantial increase in pay.
Thank you, Supervisor Feehan. Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I haven't said an awful lot tonight, and thank goodness for that. There's a question in my mind, though. We passed a resolution some time ago which expanded the scope of meetings and meeting expenses. I guess I would kind of like to know how much of a kink in the budget that gave us, because I'm sure some people use it. I haven't used it yet, and associated, you know, meetings, but I'd kind of like to know exactly what that put in there and how much it cost and whatever.
Will do. Supervisor, oh, sorry, Gary would like clarification, Supervisor Bina. I think clarification is which meetings are paid for, which are...
Well, I don't really know which ones were added to that list, because we expanded the scope of meeting expenses that were eligible to be turned in to your office. That was my impression of that resolution that we passed about 10 months ago.
Gary?
I'm not familiar with that.
Let me look it up, and I'll bring it back to you.
Okay.
Supervisor Ebert.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, we did pass something where now if I go to even a village board meeting, I can take that mileage. We talked about that. I think Ms. Hampson probably knows the most about it, because I think, Sharon, you were one of the ones behind that, weren't you?
So, Mr. Bina, are you referring to mileage and not pay? Okay.
I'd just like to know what effect that has.
Okay. So for me, this question is a good reminder of how it probably would help several of us to be reminded of what the ordinances say and what, you know, what's allowed, what's not allowed, and get a refresher on that. Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As my memory serves me, I believe what we voted on was prior to, you used to be able to get mileage for going to your committee meetings, and what it did was open up to any meetings that you attended that may be in reference to. So you may not be on that particular committee, but if you went to it for informational, then that was when your mileage could kick in. Yeah, I believe that's how we voted on that. Thank you. Yeah.
Supervisor Geary.
In regards to compensation, when you make this decision, I'd like a list of the comparable counties, and I think Bob's got the 10 or 11. How many supervisors they got, what they get paid. I don't want to. Yep. I don't want to just make it in the dark. I like to make it on factual information. I don't want to be raising the salary and get a bunch of those people John's talking about. They're going to make the meeting go for 10 hours instead of two. So if that's going to be their fault.
Mr. O'Malley, will you just address what's already been done?
Right. Finance staff and county clerk are working on an update of the information from other counties so that you'll have that during your budget debate.
And it includes not just the county board size, but whether or not there's a county administrator or a county exec or an administrative coordinator, what their structure of government is,
what the board
a lot of information.
Receives,
yeah,
all
board chair compensation. Okay. It's quite a matrix of information.
We'll focus on our comparable counties, though. You know, you might have them all, but the 10 or 11 that we always compare ourselves to would be the key ones. And number of committees they have also would be helpful if you could get that.
Okay. Supervisor Paff.
Thank you. I was of the other outside boards that I've been on. I don't know how to make this comparison because I don't have the proper numbers. But business boards, foremost, and Senex Harvest States boards and things like that, they, for board expenses, they figure that it should be 1.5 to 2% of their entire budgets, incomes. But how do you compare across, if you just wanted to? I don't know what the expenses are for the board, and I don't know if we're, if the tax levy that we put out is $29 million, or is our budget $118 million when you take everything into consideration. I don't know if that would have any bearing, but it is a guideline on for a lot of businesses of how they allot, or not allot, but stay within the parameters of a percentage basis of how the operations are run, if that helps. Because when you look at comparable counties, there's some things that enter in there, but that's just food for thought. But I don't know what you would use here for a dollar value on what our budget is.
Well, I can give you some details. Your current county board total budget is $326,000, roughly, and some change. Your total county budget is $133.676 million, and your total tax levy is 29.48. I don't know what percentages that would relate to. We've generally tried to compare to comparable counties, county board compensation, that type of thing. So I don't know if that gets at what you're looking for, or
yes and no, because I don't have an idea of what the total board here costs a county when you add in, including
$326,116,
and that's mileage and everything.
That's your entire budget, including your. Including the county board chair secretary, who is the major
right.
portion of that cost as far as staff goes, directly to that budget.
So
it's a matter of comparing it to $29 million or $130 million.
So you're saying 29 is the levy, 138 as the total? Yeah. So any other? If anybody has any other food for thought as Supervisor Paff, oh, go ahead, Supervisor Bina.
Just one other thing. We did this analysis way back when, and it gets to be real complicated when you look at adjoining counties or other counties. Vernon County, for example, gets so much per meeting, and then they get mileage on top of that. There are a lot of counties around the state that get a dollar figure per meeting, not a flat salary like we went to. So you're going to find it's going to get pretty complicated, and there's no reason why we can't make a decision, but it's not as easy as you want to look at.
Well, I very much appreciate the input. I want to make clear that because we are changing and downsizing from 35 to 29 does not necessarily mean we're going to do a bunch of wholesale change. It is very possible that much of the work that we do is affirming that how we currently do things is working well. But I think that this has been very helpful, and I think that it's important to take a little bit of time, not 10 and a half hours, but take a little bit of time to consider this and involve everyone in the process so that it happens once every 10 years, and it's an opportunity that we have not faced in a long time. So I appreciate everybody's input. And with that, I will ask if there are any conference reports. Supervisor Friedland.
Yeah, thank you. I went to a very interesting meeting today that was put on by the Wisconsin Council of Children and Families on how children and families are faring in these tough economic times. And there was some really astonishing figures, some positive and some negative. Some of the more positive ones had to do with the percentage of teens not in school and not high school graduates going down by 33%, which is impressive. Also, the teen birth rate is down. But there clearly are more children and families in poverty. Two of the statistics that just jumped right out at me, Cooley Cap every year does a count of homeless people on the same day of the year. Every year, this year it was July 27th, and there were 268 homeless people in La Crosse. A year ago, there were 167 homeless people in La Crosse, and that's pretty scary. Also, the statistic that the city of La Crosse actually has a higher poverty level right now than the city of Milwaukee is something that is very frightening. Randy Nelson from La Crosse School District talked about expecting over 50% free and reduced lunch families surfacing this year. There was a speaker from the faith community on how religious institutions are doing more, but their congregants have less to give, and increasing charity isn't going to be the answer. Jason Witt from the Human Services Department talked about working smarter in structuring services, changes that the county has made, for example, with the juvenile detention facility, and increasing coordination by working with schools, community providers, and the city, for example, the Family Policy Board, the Community Collaboration Committee, and the City-County School District Collaboration Group. So that's a report. Thank you.
Thank you, Supervisor Friedland. I think there were a couple of other supervisors at that today as well. It was very telling. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I attended the National Association of Local Boards of Health annual conference in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Still experiencing jet lag, but it was a beautiful setting for a very important conference. The Surgeon General, Vice Admiral Regina Benjamin, did come, and if people are interested in going to the, I've forgotten what the website was, but her paper on the vision for America's plan for a healthy and fit America is up on a website, and I guess I would probably just go to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. But we are the model from trying to cure and get people healthy after they have suffered from disease is changing to a prevention model, so that is very important. One of the fun things she did say in terms of how committed you are, she said, you know, if you look at your breakfast,
the chicken contributes, but the pig is committed if you're having ham and eggs. So I thought that was pretty funny. Dr. Judy Monroe, who's deputy director of the CDC, was also there, and I got to visit with her. There was a team from the CDC here to look at our obesity work that we're doing, and they happened to visit the class that Jeff and I take on being strong seniors. Right, Jeff? So they were very impressed with how muscular Jeff has become. There were different tracks at the conference, community engagement, the community health assessment, and I would say, you know, the information coming from that is place, where you live does matter in terms of how healthy you are, and with the information about poverty, that definitely plays a role in how healthy you are and what your outcomes are. There were sessions on health department partnerships, making sure that you don't think you're in this job alone, but it truly is a community issue to stay healthy, and then some succession planning and healthy homes initiatives as well. So it was a very, very good conference, very broad, and the county did not pay any of my way. The Wisconsin Association of Local Boards of Health paid some, as did the National Association.
Thank you, Supervisor Wood. And just to note, the reason that they paid for it is because of Margaret's leadership in those organizations. So thank you for your commitment not only to La Crosse County but nationally. Any other conference reports? If not, Mr. O'Malley.
Board, I have a proclamation. September 2011, Libraries and UW Extension Month, whereas educational programs for agricultural producers and professionals, businesses, local governments, communities, families, and youth are brought to the residents of La Crosse County, and whereas educational library programs identify and respond to specific community needs for education, research, and knowledge to improve the quality of life in local communities, to strengthen families, to increase the competitiveness of businesses and agriculture, enhance decision-making in local government, and to develop leadership skills for managing resources and planning for the future, and whereas libraries provide recreational educational resources in the pursuit of lifelong learning, and whereas UW Extension programming combines faculty, campus-based specialists, and staff expertise to bring university research to the people of La Crosse County in the areas of agricultural horticulture, community, natural resources, and economic development, family living, education, and 4-H and youth development. And whereas UW Extension faculty and staff and area library staff are committed to educating the residents of La Crosse County in order to promote lifelong learning and provide a more knowledgeable and informed community, now therefore be it resolved, La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of September as La Crosse County Libraries and UW Extension Month, and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contribution of persons dedicated to educating the residents and engaging with them in transforming lives and communities in La Crosse County.
Moved by Supervisor Ferries. Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Karen Johnson. Discussion on the proclamation? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The proclamation is approved unanimously.
Next, I have just two quick items that are on your desk. You have a United Way contributions form. If you're interested in doing that and you can get that done tonight, please turn them in to Ginny. Otherwise, if you don't, if you want to bring it back Thursday night at our county board regular meeting, that would be fine as well. We need to get them in from everyone that's willing to contribute. As well as also on your desk is a supplement to the September meeting schedule. We will talk about this at your regular county board meeting, just to highlight those under the board chair's report, but there are a couple of obviously unique issues that are taking a lot of PRD's time that we wanted to make sure you know that you're aware of that. And just this evening, it was brought to my attention, just a reminder, there will be a special exec meeting at 5:50 regarding the authorization to replace the facilities department truck. Because of the staggering of meetings, it came before exec, before public works. Decided to wait on that, so we're going to meet on that at 5:50. Also, there's been a suggestion that there be a special meeting of exec and public works. The city council just, I believe, last evening acted on amendments to La Crosse International Business Park covenants. We need to verify that our action is consistent with what the city did on that issue. It could have waited for the October cycle, but I believe the business would ask that we move ahead. So I'll be in touch with the county board chair and public works chair. Hopefully we can meet a few minutes before that special exec meeting. Again, I apologize. It's not listed separately on the agenda, but I wanted you to know about that, and I will be in touch with both of those chairs and hopefully the members that can get here just a little bit earlier, and we'll explain that in an agenda packet and do that. So I'm stretching this just a little
bit. I just want to check. Supervisor Richmond, do you have anything to add to that?
I was just going to add that I looked in the minutes for the economic development, did approve that, and it looks like Public Works did as well. So,
But I'll have to check and make sure that the wording was exactly what was adopted and what the covenants are. There was also a provision that they, the Public Works wanted City of Onalaska to weigh in on that as well. So I've got to follow through and deal with that issue. So, again, it's not on the agenda, but we may have a special meeting.
Okay.
That's all I wanted to mention.
That. Thank you.
So if the wording needs to be reconciled,
right,
there will need to be a special meeting.
Right. So
Supervisor Spiker.
It was economic development that added Onalaska to it. We did not add that amendment. We passed a resolution on 7711, and we don't know if it's the same as what the city passed now. So it would be a new resolution then to both committees then?
That's what I'll have to check out.
Okay.
So just bear with me. It was just brought to my attention tonight, so I'll get back to
both of
the chairs.
We amended it one time, but we didn't do the second amendment.
You're right. It says in there that Economic Development Fund talked about City of Onalaska. Your motion just said the pylon sign. So
we'll get clarification. So members of those two committees should just have a heads up that there may be an additional meeting
just before this.
The evening, probably at 5:40 or somewhere in that neighborhood, because executive committee has a 5:50 meeting. Supervisor Mettinger.
Just for clarification, that's the City of La Crosse property. So you're just asking Onalaska what they think about it? They don't have veto power or anything, right?
I don't believe so. But
they just want to know what they think
about
it.
Again, this isn't on the agenda, so let me do the research and I'll find out, because that would come to the full board. It's part of an action that would have to come here.
So there's a lot of history there,
right,
obviously.
Right.
But.
Okay. So sorry to stretch that a little bit, but I wanted to make sure people knew what was happening Thursday night. Next items that I have are actually on budget, and I promised you at the last meeting that this was requested with obviously one of the largest investments we've made as a community and as a county budget is the expansion and addition of law enforcement center. So we asked the sheriff to come and actually do an update on how the new jail is working and some of the challenges that are there, and then I'll do a very brief budget update for you as well and the status of what's coming in the next several months, as well as items that you'll deal with in the budget. So that's the most introduction you're going to get from me, Sheriff.
Sure,
I just I know that they want to hear how things are going over there.
Sure. Well, thank you for having me here tonight. I brought along Captain Doris Daggett, our jail administrator. I think everybody knows Captain Daggett, but she knows so many more of the specific day-to-day details of the jail that if I'm asked questions, I want to make sure we get you the most accurate answer, and that's so Doris is here to help with that. She's also here to, if I forget to add something, that she'll jump in and remind us. So to begin with, we've been in the new jail addition just a little bit over 6 months, and I have to start by saying thank you to Captain Daggett and her team that worked with the architect to design the facility. So many times when you go into especially a complicated facility like a jail, you find all kinds of things that you wish you'd have done differently, that could have been done differently, that you forgot to do. They worked over those details in the blueprints for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I know some of our jail staff would come up to me and say they dream about it at night as they try to make sure that they haven't forgotten anything, and it really paid off. We went into the new addition almost flawlessly. There's very little that isn't working just as we'd hoped it would, and that really says a lot about Captain Dagan and her team making sure that everything was done right. You know, you have an architect that kind of gives you the general guidelines as to what the jail should look like, but it's up to, we found out as we went through the process, it's really up to us to make sure that it works and it's going to work and take care of our needs. So, and it certainly has. There's a number of real positive things with the new addition. I thought I'd start out by talking a little bit about that. And then, as Steve O'Malley said, there's some challenges that we've identified for the future, and I'll go into some of those just to make you aware of that. To begin with, as you know, in the new addition, we have justice sanctions and probation and parole so that they're closer in proximity to each other, but also to the jail, so that when we have issues with inmates, questions, we're all under the same roof, and that really has worked out well. We're very pleased with how that's turned out. It's turned out just as we'd hoped it would, and I think it makes for a real positive working relationship for everybody. Before, if you may remember, justice sanctions was across the street. Probation and parole actually had two offices, one on the north side on, one downtown, and then one down on Mormon Cooley Road, South Avenue area. So it really is nice having everybody under one roof, and if we have questions or problems, we can deal with it right away. The other issue that's nice is we have the jail office where inmates are released right next to justice sanctions. So as an inmate leaves the jail, they can stop at our jail office. They can pick up the check that they have coming if they have some money left over in their account. And then right next door is justice sanctions, and they can go to justice sanctions if they're required to and fulfill whatever needs they have at justice sanctions. I think that that's really working out well. We designed a new booking area, and that is where people come when they first get arrested. They get fingerprinted, photo taken, and then sometimes we have cells there also for short term. Just to give you an idea, we usually have about 6,000 bookings a year that come through the La Crosse County Jail. It always surprises me that in our community we have 6,000 people that need to come in to get their fingerprints taken, a photo taken, and it's for everything from warrants for not paying to probation holds to serious crimes. But everybody that comes in gets fingerprinted and photo taken, and that's around 6,000 persons a year. So it's important that we have a booking area that's very functional, and we do. We also have a new receiving medical area. We're very satisfied with that. The jail nursing staff was working out of basically a cubbyhole. They now have an actual pharmacy area. They also have desks and areas. We have Steve Josephson, our jail psychologist, has an office. When our jail psychiatrist or jail physician comes, they have an office they can work out of. We have examination rooms and so forth. So we're really pleased with how well that's worked out. We have a kitchen that you're probably aware of that was large enough that we are able to do not only meals for the jail, but also meals for La Crosse County Aging, I think Meals on Wheels. And so that's we're very satisfied with that, and that was sized for the future so that we won't have to increase that kitchen square feet anyway for any time in the future. Is it sized for when we complete our additions? Hopefully not for another 20 years, but it is sized for that. We remodeled the women's blocks. The women's have upstairs in the main jail. If you might remember, we tried to make something more equivalent to what the men have with their direct supervision. So we do have carpets, chairs that are movable with backs, tables that are movable. Some of the rooms we put some skylights in to get natural light in to try to do something more equal to what the men had in direct supervision. We also have the video visitation, which has worked well. We've had no complaints at all from any family members about the video visitation. It seems to be working just fine. Programming, we were able to expand our programming and have enough area to conduct different programming. And again, that's what we had all planned on doing, is try to have some impact on that recidivism rate, but also to keep inmates busy so that they don't get in trouble. And that's worked. Some of the challenges I could go into. The camera system is, we've had some problems with the camera system, but it's being worked on. Next week, I think they're going to try to complete replacing 190 cameras, but that's being done at the manufacturer's cost. It's not costing La Crosse County anything, but the camera system didn't work as it was supposed to, and the manufacturers have stepped up and they're replacing it and going to make sure it works right. We are having some problems with video visitation. Some of the booths aren't working yet. I know Jim Spropoulos from facilities is on top of that, and the contractor hasn't been paid all their money yet, so they're going to need to fix that if they want to get their final payment, and it's substantial. So I'm confident that the video visitation will work also. I think it's just something that you can expect when you have a $29 million a facility that opens. You're going to have problems, and I think in this day and age, especially with electronics, when you try to get computer systems and servers and electronics to all talk to each other and work the way they're supposed to. Sometimes there are some problems with that. We have not been able to open what we call the L-pod yet, which is one of the direct supervision blocks, and I'll explain to you why that is. We've noticed quite an uptick in our inmate population that we never anticipated back when we were designing the jail. I wish I had a good explanation to you for why suddenly our inmate population has gone up so high. I can just give you an example. It's last February 2010, we had 170 inmates for an average monthly population. We ran about 150 men with about 20 women. This past August, we were up to 164 men, 25 women, for a total of about 189, or about 19 more than we did last August. And the numbers are continuing to climb. This past Monday, and of course Mondays are going to be a little higher because we have a weekend, people go to court and get out, but we had 217 inmates, 184 men and 33 females. So we are having some problems with just the numbers. We had expected that we would be able to run the booking receiving area with just one jailer. And I know that if you're not familiar with it, it's a little abstract for me to talk about it because it's difficult to imagine what it looks like. But it's an area that has both medical cells and we call receiving cells, which typically is where people stay for the first 24 hours. Our anticipation was if we had lower numbers that we'd be able to move more people upstairs and keep those numbers low downstairs, and we would be able to just keep one jail staff member back in that the receiving medical area. But when we're running 30 or 40 inmates back there, it's not what we had anticipated. On top of that, we're seeing more mentally ill in our jail and more seriously mentally ill persons in our jail than we've ever seen in La Crosse County Jail. I know Steve Josephson is our jail psychologist. He said in his, I don't know how long he's been working with us, 15 or 20 years, he's never seen inmates as ill as what we have right now. We tend to keep those persons downstairs because we need to keep them separate oftentimes, but we also want to have our jail staff close by and present. And so we have a lot of very seriously mentally ill people in our jail right now. And there's a number of reasons for that, I think, and some of them that is my own personal opinion. But hospitals aren't accepting the mentally ill like they were at one time. I know that we never had before where hospitals are sending inmates back to us that we send to the hospital in hopes that they'll be placed in the psych ward, send them back to us and tell us this person is seriously mentally ill, they're a significant suicide risk, you need to put a very close suicide watch on this person and have them seen by your medical staff. That's what the hospitals are sending back to us. So the hospitals aren't interested in dealing with some of those people that really should be in a hospital. You probably remember that Mendota and Winnebago, which are the state health institutions, both reduced the number of persons that they'll take. So a number of the persons that are in our jail right now, I suspect, would probably have been sent to Mendota or Winnebago, but we're not able to send those because they've capped the number of admissions that they're willing to take. And what that does is push these inmates back into the county jail. And, you know, unfortunately, we have a jail here. We don't have a hospital. Jail is not a place for the seriously mentally ill, but unfortunately, that's what we're experiencing, a lot of the mentally ill coming back into our jail. And recently I heard that one of our local hospitals have reduced their bed space on their psych unit from 65 to 22, just to give you an example on a local level what's going on. So these people that are ending up in our jail that are seriously mentally ill, unfortunately they're staying in our jail much longer, which means they're much more intensive for us to deal with, much more intensive for us to work with. As far as the population of females and men, why it's gone up as high as it has, I don't have an explanation for you. We're seeing a lot of persons come into our jail that are under the influence of drugs more than we've seen in the past. It's difficult to quantify those numbers because oftentimes they come into our jail for a theft, they come into our jail for disorderly conduct, they may have got into some other trouble, but they're under the influence of drugs. And what makes it really worse is we're seeing a lot of persons using meth. They're coming in very ill. from their meth use, but we're also seeing a lot of persons using heroin. And I can tell you that from the time that I've been working in law enforcement until the last couple of years, we never saw too much heroin here in La Crosse. There was always some, of course, but heroin has become very common. Unfortunately, I think part of that comes from the abuse of the opiate pain medication has led into a lot of the heroin usage. And now at times we'll have two or three inmates on a heroin withdrawal program in our jail. Again, that's very intensive. Our staff really needs to keep an eye on those people, and they're very ill. And we're seeing a lot of people come into our jail physically ill, diabetics. We've got two right now going for kidney dialysis. We just have a lot of persons that are ill. So all those issues tend to cause us some problems, and that's the reason that we need to have our two staff persons down in our medical booking area. Now, the good news is with that is we really haven't needed to open that blot, that pod L, and we can't do it anyway. We don't have the staff unless we paid overtime. And I will certainly work with the space we have as long as we can. It's working fine now. I think we have about 40 in our other direct supervision pod, and there's 57 beds there. So we have some room that we could grow there. We don't like to pack them quite so tight with people because it causes other issues and other problems, especially with programming, but we can certainly do that. The direct supervision block that we are using is working great. It's beyond our best expectations. I think everyone was a little hesitant. It was something new, something we hadn't tried before, and it's really worked well. I think we're accomplishing what we want to. We're getting we have kind of the carrot and the stick for those inmates to reason for them to behave, to try to get into that direct supervision. And once they get in there, there's more programming opportunities. And in the long run, of course, we hope that we can keep people safe in the jail, but we also hope that we can do something to impact their lives so that they're not coming back to the jail all the time. For example, class we're teaching, Thinking for a Change, which is going on in our jail. I know it's going on with Justice Sanctions. It's going on with probation and parole. So we try to keep people in some of these programs so that when they leave the jail, they can continue taking the classes. And I know that the Thinking for a Change, I can't speak about it personally. I don't have a lot of information, but I know it's one of those programs that have been proven to have an impact and can make a change in people's lives. We're also working hard to look at what we can do to reduce our jail population. I know this Wednesday I'm meeting with Jane from Justice Sanctions, a judge, the representative from probation and parole, the district attorney, and a public defender, so we can take a look at our population and see what we can do to try to bring those numbers down and see if we can identify if there's some problem areas. Right now, it seems pretty scattered. It seems just a little of this and a little of that. It doesn't look like it's just one problem that, or one judge or one probation officer that's holding more people. It's not that easy to put a finger on, but we're going to try to do that, and we're doing that on Wednesday. We'll be meeting to take a look at that. And I can't speak much about the transition from jail to community, but I know that Jane and Captain Daggett are both working hard on, and along with Vicki Burke, looking at making some changes so that people that get out of jail hopefully have some tools and have some mechanisms that they don't come back for jail, whether it's housing, whether it's a job, whether it's mental health medications or staying on a program or whatever the case may be. And again, any of those three could certainly explain it much better than I can. Doris, is there anything else that you can think of that I could add?
Covered it.
Okay. I'm not sure what's driving it. I heard Supervisor Friedland talk about the higher number of homeless, the higher level of poverty in our community. I don't know if those are the types of factors that are leading to our increase in jail population. Again, it's very complicated, and each one of those 217 inmates we had yesterday is a unique story and a unique case. Whether it's their criminal histories, whether it's their personal issues, whether it's addictions, mental health, whatever the case may be. So it is difficult sometimes to look at the population and understand the story behind each of those inmates and why the judge made that decision or why the district attorney made that decision or probation and parole that felt that they needed to stay in the jail. It's not as easy as just kind of glancing through it and being able to pick out ones that you think or trends. The trends aren't easy to follow or to find. So that's kind of a very quick overview. Does anyone have any questions?
Any questions for the sheriff? Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does justice sanctions and the jail, are they supposed to get reviewed every, let's say, 5 years by an agency, let's say Eau Claire's Police Department or Manitowoc's or somebody's, and maybe we do vice versa? Does some outside agency come in and do a review every so many years?
Of justice sanctions?
And the jail.
Of the jail? Well, we do have the Department of Corrections comes yearly and reviews the jail. It's a fairly comprehensive jail review, but we also have had, for example, NIC come in. We had the National NCCHC, which is a national healthcare, that came in and did an audit to see if our healthcare was up to standard. We've had them look at our mental health. We've had them look at suicide prevention, the National Institute of Corrections. So we don't necessarily have one department that comes in and reviews everything other than the Department of Corrections, but we have asked for special reviews. Right now we have, just today and tomorrow, we have someone coming in, and I'm not sure where he's from.
Massachusetts,
looking at our jail data. Yeah, the hope is that the more we can understand the jail data, the more information we can get out of that jail data, we can answer some of these questions better as far as trends and why people are there and how they're there. And right now that data is very difficult to come by, so we've asked for we received a grant for this gentleman to come to work with us to try to help us understand how we can do more with our data.
Yeah, I think they called it an assessment. Didn't the NIC say every so many years, and not just La Crosse's, I mean all the jails around the state should have one of these done every so often? Did they call them an assessment or something like that, or had a term for it?
Yeah.
There's an accreditation that you can get.
Do you want to stand up? And
there are some jails that you can get accredited through NCCHC, but we are not part of that accreditation system.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. Sheriff, how are these people designated mentally ill? Do they get sent someplace? How is that done?
We have an extensive questionnaire, healthcare questionnaire, that was designed especially to identify persons that might be having mental health problems. Doris, do you know, have any more information where that was from? Anyway, we have it.
It's part of the state recommendations.
Part of the state of Wisconsin recommendations, but it's several pages long where we try to identify persons that may be having mental health issues and if they've had past mental health issues. And if they do, then we refer them immediately to typically Steve Josephson, our jail psychologist, and then he will take a look at that, and he can meet with them one-on-one, or many times, quite honestly, Steve Josephson's been in our system working with our people for so long, he knows many of these people, so many of them come back time and time again, and we all know kind of who they are and what their situation is.
So they've been housed there before then.
Some are, yes.
Some are. Homelessness was, you were talking about that. Can you identify those people? Do they?
Well, you know, there's stigma attached to homelessness, so it's self-reporting. I think that it's difficult. Some people report they have a home when in fact they may not, only because of the stigma attached to being homeless. But there's other people that may say that they are homeless when they don't, because they don't necessarily want somebody to know where they're residing. So for us, we're just relying on their self-report, and we ask the question and we take their answer. It's up to, I guess, later on, whether it's attorney, whether it's a pre-sentence investigation or whatever, to try to work through that.
And then also, you were speaking of drugs. Have these, I don't know what they're called, the bath salts, and
right.
Have you found a large amount of that in the area?
Yeah, I meant to mention that.
Winona, for some reason, the city of Winona was experienced a large amount of the what they call plant food, bath salts, K2, back throughout the summer, and we hadn't seen so much of it. Interesting, the federal government did outlaw most of those this past summer, but I'm not sure why, but we've seen an increase lately, and we're finding people come in that are very, very much under the influence, hallucinating, and it seems that it's taking several days for them to really come down and find reality again. So we're finding people that are often combative as well when they come in, and what we're learning is that they've been using some of these chemicals that are commonly called bath salts or plant food or whatever, but dangerous chemicals, and it's certainly affecting them.
Is that stuff easily manufactured? Is that why it's...
I don't know if it's easily manufactured or not.
Thank you.
Supervisor Paff.
Thank you. You'd mentioned, you know, the uptrend in inmates. Is this the statewide, you communicate, or is Western Wisconsin-wide, or is it just a general trend being up?
Well, I think we knew, and even when the Cary Group came and helped work through some of those problems, we knew that over time we would continue to see more inmates, which is why we built the additional space onto the jail that we could use in the future. I haven't checked with Vernon County or Trempealeau County to see if over the last couple of months they've experienced what we have. You know, sometimes with populations, it's very interesting. Sometimes you see these peaks, and then they go back down, and we wonder why they went up. We wonder why they went down. Sometimes they stay high. And again, it's very difficult. The data is difficult to determine. So I don't have a good answer for you if it's something that's this drastic increase that we've seen over the last couple of months is statewide or Western Wisconsin, but certainly it's here in La Crosse County.
Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you. I'll touch a little bit on what Jeff was talking about, the mental health overload that you're getting in the jail. Is there a limit that the state will allow you to have there, or do you reach that where you can't take any more, or how does that work?
Well, unfortunately, as persons tend to fall through the cracks, and it's certainly a whole other issue, the criminalization of mental illness. If persons don't get help or find help earlier, oftentimes they land at the bottom, which is the criminal justice system. So, no, the answer is we're going to have to deal with whatever we get. We're fortunate that we've had your support here at the county board. We do have Steve Josephson, who comes over, I believe, 20 hours a week. We have a social worker or another psychologist from the Health and Human Service Clinical Services. I think he's spending about 20 hours a week. We have Cindy Ursley from Justice Sanctions comes over. We also have Dr. Tranel, a psychiatrist. Very fortunate to have him. He donates a lot of his time. We've agreed to pay him for up to 10 hours a month, I believe, and he's ending up donating a lot of his time, and we really appreciate that. He helps us work on those very difficult cases. So, you know, we're stretched thin, but we're making it work.
But there's no number that you...
That we don't have a number. Part of that is, you know, there's such a range with persons that come into our jail mentally ill. Some people are just off their medications. If we get them their medications and get them stabilized, they're doing fine. We have other people that are very psychotic, and it's very difficult to try to stabilize those persons.
Well, you indicated you weren't a hospital, and I don't think any of us want you to be a hospital, but
right.
You're under some tight reins here, I understand. Thank you.
Sure.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Sheriff Helgeson, Captain Daggett. I don't expect you to have this information tonight, so you don't necessarily need to share it if you don't have it, but maybe in the future we could get some information. I know it's only been 6 months, but get some information on jailer safety and inmate safety in terms of, like, number of incidents. I know one of the impetuses behind all the innovations and initiatives that we did with the new LEC is because we want to cut back on those confrontations, violent confrontations, and making sure that both our inmates and our jailers are safe. Mm-hmm. So maybe get some information on that. And I know, Sheriff, you do an excellent job with working with very stretched, limited resources. But if there was one area in the budget that you'd want to increase, what would that be for your budget?
Well, you know, it's the most difficult area. It's the one that is the most expensive and the most difficult to approve. In these times, and that would be manpower.
Speaking of that, you mentioned that the LPOD isn't opened yet. So it's basically the approach now. There's just more inmates in the receiving area. Is that what's happening? You mentioned that you have more inmates down in receiving slash medical.
Right. We have more in the receiving slash medical, and then we also have actually more up in our main jail, which was kind of the older part of the jail. And then we're also running a substantial number in the other direct supervision pod. But like I said, so far we're able to make it work.
Okay. And one my last question then, thank you, is you mentioned 217 yesterday, total daily population. How has our new facility been able to meet those challenges versus the old facility? If you could just briefly comment on that.
Well, the big difference is with that number, we would have many persons sleeping on the floor. It'd be very overcrowded, much more dangerous, as I've talked in the past, for both our staff and the inmates. Having more room, having those extra 57 beds in the direct supervision area, having more beds downstairs. I think we have 44 beds in receiving. So we have more room, we have more places to keep people, and we're not just shoving people in at the, you know, overcrowding, and the more overcrowded it is, the worse it gets as far as dangerousness. Yeah.
Supervisor Mock.
I'm on a collaboration committee, and a couple of weeks ago, a woman from the Salvation Army was there, and she said the Salvation Army is so full that they are turning people away. Mm-hmm. And she said, we practically have people sleeping on the floor.
Wow.
And that's, I'm sure, having to do with the economy, all kinds of things.
Sure.
But, you know, it's a rise in lots of things that are happening.
Sure, I'm sure it is. Usually it isn't just the jail that shows those kind of,
yeah,
of increases. And as you talk about Salvation Army, poverty, homelessness, I think, mm-hmm, I'm sure there's many other areas that have increased that it's not favorable that those areas do increase.
Supervisor Feehan.
I'm concerned about what I'm hearing regarding people with mental illness that are falling through the cracks of the system and ending up in your care. Last year we created a care center, and my understanding was that it was supposed to take some of these people that have, let's say, intoxication problems or mental health issues. I think I'm the only representative of the Health and Human Services Board here right now, so it's concerning.
Supervisor Wood and Brock Miller.
Oh, okay, maybe they can chime in on this too. But I'm just kind of curious where why these people are ending up in your care. We're hearing that the hospitals have reduced the number of beds that they've designated to do this. Can you comment on why these people aren't ending up in the care center and they're ending up at the jail?
Well, I think they end up at the jail because they commit a crime. You know, certainly there's diversion. Certainly there can be a decision made that they don't need to end up at the jail, that the crime could be withheld or you wouldn't need to prosecute immediately. I'm probably not the best to speak about the care center, but I do understand that it was primarily for Chapter 51 persons that were looking at actively harming themselves, which is different than what we necessarily are seeing at the jail. We get a lot of people come in that are doing that, are interested in, or say they are, but I think that it was more of a diversion from the hospitals rather than a diversion from jail, but certainly jail also, but I'm really not the best person to speak to how the care center is operating.
Mr. O'Malley?
The other item, of course, is the care center is a very short-term stay, 2-3 days at the most, as I understand it. Again, I'm not the best expert to respond, but it's also only 8 beds. Yeah, huge contrast in the numbers that we're talking about in medical and receiving right now is 34 as of Monday. So, I mean, just the sheer numbers of what the sheriff is describing is much different from the care center was never expected to deal with those kinds of numbers. though there may be some similarities of types of clients at times, and we could obviously bring in Matt from clinical or Jason to talk more specifically about that, but the challenge is that we're not dealing with the same kind of people, and the sheer numbers are drastically different.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Thank you. I want to compliment Sheriff and Captain Daggett. You guys are doing a good job under challenging environments. And, you know, if La Crosse ever was an Ozzie and Harriet city, it probably isn't anymore. Mm-hmm. I think things have changed a lot. There was a sheriff, a couple sheriffs back, not you and not your predecessor, who described the inmates of the La Crosse County Jail as trash and losers. And, you know, maybe that simplified it a little bit too much. I think that it's a lot more complicated than that, and I think your commentary indicates it's a lot more complicated than that, and the people you get in there are a lot more complicated than that. And I guess two questions I have is, one, I understand that receiving medical area and the need to have more staff down there because there might be some liability issues if there's a suicide, and I'm sure there's lots of threats and maybe even attempts, so you have to have them under fairly constant observation, at least for the first while, because they come in, they're high, they're drunk, they're mentally ill, they're banging around, they're pretty tough characters at that point, I would suspect.
Right, right. And also we're holding some females down there in our receiving area, so it's important that we have two staff members, again, so for accusations or liability issues, but also, just as you said, it's you know, with the type of people we have down there, one jailer can't be alone back there and open the door with somebody that's violent or still hallucinating or still high. We need two people there. And with the numbers, you know, sometimes if we had a lower number, possibly we could call a staff member from someplace else to come back to help. But with a high number, we're constantly opening doors and dealing with these people. So it's important that we have two persons
there. So in that receiving area, the men and women are mixed up because they're in individual cells, so you have to have a female and a male
Right, we do have them. We have them segregated to some degree, but they are in individual cells. We segregate them so hopefully that it's not easy for them to try to speak back and forth to mm-hmm. other ones, because that can cause disruptions. But we also need to cover some windows sometimes to make sure, generally for females, to make sure that they have some privacy if there's people walking through.
Okay. Then my last question is you know, the jail isn't living an isolated world, as you suggested. People are coming and going, and we heard about the poverty indicators. La Crosse has the highest poverty rate in the state right now, even higher than Milwaukee. Our juvenile justice rate of arrest is higher than in Milwaukee. Are we working? Do you work with the city, the school district, other people? I mean, they have this housing task force now. We know that, you know, rental property is a bigger problem than owner-occupied homes. Are you getting involved in any of those kind of bigger discussions? Or?
Somewhat. Not specifically with the housing, but we do have invited oftentimes the one of the captains from La Crosse Police Department to join us when we're meeting with the DA and the judges and probation and parole to start talking about who's being arrested and how they're being processed and maybe who doesn't need to come to jail, who could be simply cited on the street rather than brought to jail. So in that regard, we talk certainly with the city police department. But as far as, like, the housing and that kind of thing, I haven't been involved in that.
Okay, thank you.
I have a couple of supervisors who wish to speak for a second time. I'm just letting everybody know I'm going through the first-time speakers first. So next is Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and thank you for the great job you're doing under difficult circumstances.
Thank you.
A few months ago, there was an individual in the paper who had committed a crime for the express purpose of, you know, being allowed to go back to jail. You know, he needed, I think, the safety of the jail situation, maybe the three square meals and maybe the bed. Do you suspect that, you know, a number of people commit crimes just so they have a place to stay? I mean, is that an issue, do you think?
It certainly is possible. I don't recall ever hearing anybody say that. But at the same time, some people leave our jail, and within just a few hours, they've done another crime, and they come right back again. So you have to wonder, even though they didn't say, I did this on purpose to come back to jail, they certainly knew that the outcome of their actions was probably going to land them back in jail. So you have to, it's like, you get, sometimes you question whether that was really a deterrent or if they didn't mind the trip back. But as far as somebody saying or our belief that we know of somebody that intentionally got arrested just to spend the night in jail, I can't recall that.
It was in the paper.
Was it from La Crosse?
Yeah, it was in La Crosse. Anyone else remember this?
It was your own special edition of the La Crosse Tribune.
Yeah.
Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you very much. And I wanted to thank Sheriff Helgeson in advance for agreeing to be part of a panel discussion that's going to be coming up in a couple weeks that I'm going to let all the supervisors know about. It's going to be a community conversation about the mentally ill and offenders in the jail system and how to get the community involved in this conversation. And it's being sponsored by the La Crosse County Human Services Department, NAMI, Franciscan Sisters of Perpetual Adoration, the D.B. Reinhart Center at Viterbo, primarily by Amos, the faith-based group. So I want to thank you in advance for that, and I'll let everybody know about that. But I wanted to ask a question about direct supervision and also about the women in the jail. And I've asked this question at the committee level before, and I understand that it's been difficult to develop a direct supervision program for the women because of the number of jailers and the other demands that they've had. The women, as you mentioned, have a little bit of a different circumstance. They have more cells. They have the carpeting. They have the skylights and so forth.
Sure.
But I'm wondering how you feel about the success of direct supervision so far and how important it is, whether it's a priority for you. You also mentioned that it's not so bad that Pod L has not been able to be developed as direct supervision. You've needed those jailers elsewhere.
Right.
So my question is, how successful has it been? How important is it in your list of priorities? And also, if we know that the women population, the female population is up, if it were possible to have direct supervision in the female cells, do you think it would make a difference?
So I'll start with your first question. As far as direct supervision and the impact it's had, I think it has had a very positive impact in our jail. You know, it's there's a number of reasons for direct supervision. It is safety. It is a carrot, as I said earlier, kind of the carrot and the stick to give somebody a reason to behave in a positive manner rather than no reason to behave in a positive manner, which makes life much easier for our jailers and much safer. But also for those persons that may be mentally ill, if Steve Josephson feels, our jail psychologist, that somebody needs to be would do well in direct supervision, he'll make a recommendation, and I can't think of a time we haven't honored his recommendation. If he thinks somebody would do well there, we'll put them where Steve Josephson believes that they should be. Also, persons that may have committed crimes that other inmates may victimize them for or injure them. In a direct supervision pod, the circumstances are different. We have a jailer in there all the time, and we find that even those persons that might be at a high risk for being injured by other jail staff as a result of their crimes are much safer in a direct supervision pod. As far as for females, I think I'll let Doris, if you don't mind answering about the females. I know you have some plans for possibly doing some of that.
We have talked about making some changes for the females. There won't be any direct supervision in those smaller blocks, partly because of the numbers. There are limited numbers of females in those small blocks, and it really doesn't warrant having a jailer in there. We are going to do a little test with Pod L coming up in a couple weeks. Showers in the existing old blocks were never sealed with the epoxy coating like the new blocks have, and it's a much more sanitary coating that they can put on. It's easier to clean, so we are going to move the females into Pod L for a couple of weeks while we shift inmates around. This will give us a little bit of a trial run to see how it's going to work with females in there, depending on our numbers. they won't have as many privileges as the male direct supervision block right now, because it is just a temporary setting. Again, it's going to cost us some extra money for staffing, because we have to have a jailer in there. But, you know, we are experimenting with some direct supervision. We have not implemented any of the discussions we'd had about extra privileges for certain female blocks. It's still on the table, but we just have not implemented those yet.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. My question is about veterans. Have you, or do you deal with a lot of veterans that are incarcerated?
We certainly do have veterans. I know that we do try to flag when our deputies come in contact with a veteran that may be in need of services, or a veteran that gets arrested. We do try to make sure that the veterans office does get the copy of that report so that they can follow up and contact that person. You know, part of the problem we have, in my belief, is unfortunately, if it's a negative contact, if somebody's been fighting, if somebody's been fighting with their spouse, domestic abuse, they're intoxicated, they're angry, oftentimes getting good information from somebody is difficult the night of the arrest. But we do try to gather that information. Those that are honest with us or give us the information that they are veterans, we do forward that information on. As far as how many veterans we have in the jail, I couldn't tell you. I'm not certain. I don't think it's a large number. Do you?
I don't know.
I just don't know, I guess.
Well, yeah, you're going the right direction there, I think, because there are a couple different facilities in the community here that deal with both mental illness and some of the other problems they have. So you guys just kind of contact the Veterans Service Office here, or are you in direct contact with these facilities?
Well, we certainly would send the report to the Veterans Office here, but also when Steve Josephson does his interviews, I'm sure one of the things that he's going to ask about is medications. Do you have the ability to get medications? Because if they're on medications, we want to keep them on the medications that the doctor has put them on. But if they're not on medications at the current time, we want to see what options they have to receive medications. And then it also may make a difference of what type of medication they get, because if they have limited funding ability, we're going to have to try to find the cheapest, but what's going to work best for them for the amount of money that they can afford. So I think that if we don't capture that information early on, that Steve Josephson, for example, on mental health, or even our medical staff, when somebody sobers up or wants to be honest, then I know our medical staff will contact those clinics directly, and I'm sure Steve Josephson does also.
Supervisor Karen Johnson.
Thank you. Bringing the conversation back to direct supervision a little bit, do you track recidivism rates for inmates who have experienced direct supervision versus those who haven't in our jail?
Well, right now we're not able to pull that data out, and that's one of the reasons we have the gentleman here today and tomorrow from Massachusetts. He's working with us to try to help us explore different ways that we may be able to pull that data out. I talked to him specifically about recidivism rates and what kind of data we would need today, and he's going to come up with some ideas and write a report for us that we'll take back, and between justice sanctions and the sheriff's department, and we share information with probation and parole, and try to come up with some solutions that everybody can get the information that they need, but we can also get the data that's important for us in order to gain some of that information that right now we're not able to because of the way the computer system collects the data.
Thank you.
Sure.
Supervisor Geary.
Madam Chair, for the long-term solution, are you going to have a dialogue with Gunderson Lutheran and St. Francis and Human Services? Are you all planning to get some meetings together to try to figure out what's the best way to handle this?
Well, we've had many meetings, I know, especially in conversations with the care center.
The care center, what care center?
What we spoke about earlier, the diversion for the Chapter 51.
Are we meeting with the hospitals?
There was Human Services met extensively with the hospitals. I don't know how to characterize that, but I don't think it was very successful.
Thank you, Sheriff, very much. Okay. We appreciate your coming in and sharing that information.
Sure.
Changing things up a little bit on the agenda, we're asking now for future agenda items so that we can finish the meeting with the closed session. Supervisor Feehan. Oh, I'm sorry.
Just
budget update. Sorry. Can you hold
for
a minute? Thank you.
It is very brief, frankly, because I knew the sheriff's report would take a little bit of time. But I just want to remind everybody that that illustrates the kind of challenge. You heard the challenges from Human Services that went through the complexities of not just the deficit at the care center and the lack of cooperation that we're getting on solving some of those issues within the community. But in addition to the state budget cuts are federal changes in waiver laws and those types of things. But this illustrates for the sheriff's department, for the jail, a real difficult challenge. When we closed the female jail, the women's jail here in this building, and transferred both of those positions over, we thought that that was going to be enough to be able to have one post in jail medical and receiving and one added to pod L, and that that would solve our ongoing problem. Remember that in the unique judgment of the legislature, we have no ability to raise property taxes for actually being able to staff. We can raise property taxes for debt service. So we can't be in a position to actually even add the additional position that would be there. We had hoped that this would actually work to do that. Remember, six positions is necessary for one post. That's roughly $350,000. And because we have no ability to make significant reductions in levy within the jail, remember that that's happening throughout the rest of the budget to try to make up and maintain levels of staffing and issues within the jail. And I'll give you a lot of those kinds of details when I come back with that. Just briefly then, in addition to the state budget cuts that we've spent a great deal of time talking about, we also have the local economy and the global economy that's impacting our ability. We're losing about $600,000 a year of interest revenue that we usually have. We have no ability to make that up in operating levies. So there are a number of significant impacts. You will get a detail on what the so-called tools that the governor has done within the budget regarding WRS and those kinds of things. So you'll see that in a detailed breakdown as we come back. I had expected to go into a lot more detail, but we're scrambling this week to finalize the county administrator's budget. We've still got a gap of almost $200,000, about $160,000 yet to be able to bring this budget in at zero. We continue to look closer at a number of items. We do have some positive news in that the Mississippi Valley Health Services Commission met and was receptive to a 5% increase in revenue there, but all counties are reducing or trying to reduce their reliance on Lakeview, as I shared with you before. So we do have some ways of moderating that impact. We are going to have to look at outside agencies and our contributions there. We will look at some of the indirect charges that are there. I don't see us proposing huge changes in user fees. I explained that last time. We didn't have large changes last year, but we'll walk through that in detail. We are not pushing ourselves to a larger reliance on fund balances, but again, this will end up being a very difficult budget year just to meet that, and we've got to meet a 0% operating levy, even with the types of challenges that the sheriff described, even with the types of challenges that the highway commissioner will describe in keeping up. So these next 2 years are going to be very challenging. There will be major capital items that the new county board will end up having to address and deal with in highway, in Lakeview, and the challenges that are there that we'll describe in some detail, as well as the ongoing issues of the administrative center. Probably the best news that I have is on the law enforcement center debt. You'll end up seeing a resolution that will come to you on Thursday, which will do instead of dealing with the refinancing of the law enforcement center debt, we will only deal with the 2011 highway debt that we had talked about. Upon closer examination, I'll give you a lot of details on this as we walk through it. The 2001A LEC debt that has actually 4 years left after this year, it looks like we will be able to, because of how we've managed our law enforcement center project and came in under budget, because we have reserves in jail assessment, and how we stretched out the actual drawing of the debt at the time that we actually issued it, we should have enough to actually pay off the 2001A debt 3 years early and do that in 2012. So that'll give us a little bit of margin in future years. So instead of refinancing that debt, which would have brought our interest rate down from 4.5 to 1.6%, we will actually end up paying it all off early and saving about $364,000 worth of interest. So we're able to do some creative and unique things in how we manage debt, but the operating levy, it just continues to be an ongoing challenge. So I'll explain all that in more detail as we bring that through, but the resolution will only be for financing of the highway short-term debt that we talked about. We won't do the refinancing that I had talked about. We're able to actually pay that off early. So what you should expect is that the county administrator's budget will be completed this week. The finance staff will need about a week and a half to 2 weeks to do the final balancing and everything. The budget book should be in your lockers by the end of the month. You'll have a week to be able to review those individually before we start going through the committee process. I keep saying each year, this is the most, but far and away, this is the most challenging, and we've got to do it on a two-year basis because we know that there is no operating levy relief for the second year. We've got to do back-to-back zeros, and we only get the WRS savings of shifting that to employees this year. Once it's done, not getting any additional budget savings for the following year. So there will be some difficult choices to make within each of these next two calendar years, particularly for the new board in wrestling with many of the capital items. So, again, I just wanted to keep that very brief and keep you up to date because I knew the sheriff would be a lot more interesting than my presentation. So, not that he had any good news, but it, so that's all I had, Madam Chair. I just wanted to keep the board up to date on when you can expect the budget books to come out, and we'll walk you through that in October. October will be a very busy month for committees, and we will be open to additional meetings if necessary as we go through that. If you want more detail on how we've solved this, so we still have a lot of work yet to do this week.
Thank you, Mr. Malley. My apologies for skipping over your last agenda item. Back to you, Mr. Feehan, on future agenda items.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, once again, I'd like to see a report on county employment over the last decade. I'd like to understand where the growth in employment has taken place. And on a couple of occasions, the administrators referenced savings from WRS, and so I'd be curious to see how he calculates what the what those contributions do mean in terms of savings for our county payroll.
Other future agenda items? Anything out of committees? If not, Supervisor Burke, would you call us into closed session, please, so we can hear from Corp Counsel?
Madam Chair, I move that we, the County Board, go into closed session for the purpose of conferring with legal counsel for the governmental body who is rendering oral or written advice concerning a strategy to be adopted by the body with respect to litigation in which it is or is likely to become involved pursuant to Wisconsin State Statute Sections 19.85, Parent 1, Parent G, to wit, imminent or current litigation concerning La Crosse County or its departments.
Is there a second? Seconded by Supervisor Brock Miller. All those in favor of going into closed session, signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We are in closed session. We didn't take it.
time to time, it's probably not a bad idea to explain exactly what closed session means to a supervisor. Very simple, but just you don't talk about what we spoke about in closed session, even to your family members.
And if Roger's mic was on, you would have heard him say.
Microphone's not on either, no. Is there a motion to adjourn? Moved by Supervisor Kyle, seconded by Supervisor Jay Johnson. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We are adjourned. Thank you. Just a reminder.